S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y. Let's go.
Okay, here we go. We just dropping Bay City Rollers? As we start this podcast, Elliot Friedman, sitting across from me, has just put his iPhone down. Elliot, is that the first time you've put your iPhone down in about, I'm going to say conservatively, a week, considering everything with Austin Matthews?
It's up there. You know, if I'm wearing my watch, I leave it down a lot more, but I'm not. So I'll be picking it up several times. So this time of year,
yeah,
you can't be away from your phone.
How loud is it? Like, how loud do you set it when you go to sleep? Just to make sure if anything happens, it wakes you up.
Just the ping? The ping, yeah.
Can you wake up on the ping? I can't.
If it's close to, like, I sleep through everything. Like, my wife will not let me stay alone with my son because he'll wake up once a night and I'll just sleep right through it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many days she's growling at me. I'm like, oh, Max sleep well last night? And she goes, he's been up since 2 a.m. Oh, really? But if I put the ping right next to I will hear that most of the time.
She's probably not a fan of teams like Colorado and St. Louis. And I'm thinking of teams that have done deals around 2 o'clock in the morning before.
The one in the summer, she got annoyed at me about is I really do try to be better with the phone in the summer. Matt Dumba signed his extension late night before arbitration, and it came to me really late. Mm-hmm. And I think I tweeted out, someone will tell me what time it was, but I think it was like 1 or 2 in the morning. And she was looking at me and she's going,
really?
Really?
In the summer?
Really? And then someone actually sent me a note the next morning, like, do you ever sleep? It's July or August, whatever month it was.
So the Jays playing the Mariners and you were still up or something?
I don't remember why I was up. I don't remember that. I happened to be up. I got the note. I had sent out a tweet and she was looking at me. I think I've told this story before. Maybe not on this podcast, but the last two times I really turned off my phone, I think, were when my son was born. And the time before that I turned off my phone, I think, was the day that Dion Phaneuf was traded. So I just turned it off.
From Calgary to Toronto or Toronto to Ottawa?
Calgary to Toronto. I think he got traded to Toronto, and I turned my phone off, and I was like, I can't.
Saturday night or a Sunday morning.
It was a Sunday morning, so I'm like, I can't turn my phone off again. So I don't turn my phone off a lot unless it's particular reasons, like my son is born. But now, particularly, you can't. This is what we're paid for.
When did your spidey sense start tingling about Austin Matthews?
It was really that day.
You guys talked a lot about it on the weekend. Well, you guys have been talking about it on Hockey Night for a while, but...
Well, I mean, even for Toronto, I think this year has been over the top.
No such thing. I disagree with that. There's no such thing as over the top in Toronto.
I disagree with that.
What do Leafs fans want? They want too much information.
You know what? I'll tell you this. I get a split, and you guys can all tweet at us and tell us what you think the right answer is. I grew up in Toronto. I've got friends who are huge Leaf fans.
Mm-hmm.
They have said to me that this year has been too much.
I maintain that's what Maple Leafs fans want.
I don't think they all do.
The cups runneth over. That's what they want. They want cups and they want it to runneth over.
You guys all out there in Twitter world, you can tell us who's right. Now, I know that I am, but a few of you should tell Jeff he's right so that he feels good.
I host
Hockey. Because he really sulks and goes into a corner when anyone tells him he's wrong.
I host Hockey Central at noon. I get roasted every day from people on Twitter saying enough of the Leaf talk. Trust me, I get it.
So anyway, I do think this year has been over the top. But I think for most of us, it's when Dubas came out and said they'd made progress. You know, if he hadn't come out and said that, I don't think it would have really been known until last weekend. But the day he came out and said that, everybody kind of started to have an idea that things were going.
Was there one thing that got the dominoes rolling on this? 5 years, $58.17 million of the contract, AAV 11.634. Was there one moment on either side where someone said, let's just get this done?
I think it was Matthews. I really do think he reached a point where he said, I'd like this to be done. And I don't think he was angry or anything. I think it was more of like a gentle, let's do this.
Does that couple with his little mini funk?
If you look at this, the last couple of weeks, he's been a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there was a world coming off his shoulders. If you watched him at his media scrum on Tuesday after he signed the contract, he was really happy. And I watched his interview he did with Tim and Sid. He laughed at a few of their questions. Yeah. He was very relaxed.
What are the thoughts that roll through your head when you're about to put, you know, your signature on the dotted line that'll give you a 200% raise on your salary?
I don't know. I think you just kind of think back to being a kid and dreaming of playing in the NHL, and then now you're you know, signing your second contract in the NHL, which is, you know, extremely special for me and my family, and a lot of credit to them and what they've done for me and helping me achieve my dreams.
Do you realize how excited the city and the fan base are after this deal is signed?
I mean, I'm just as excited. I love wearing the Maple Leaf. I love playing in this city. And, you know, this city, it's amazing to play in. And just the support that we get from Leafs Nation and all our fans, it's like nothing else. So I never imagined, you know, growing up in Arizona, I'd be playing in Toronto, the mecca of hockey. And to me, it's special, and I'm extremely honored and proud.
And I think once Matthews kind of gently suggested it was time to get it done, I think the train really started going from both directions.
The obvious questions will be asked. Why 5 years?
It was going to be 5 or 6.
Why the number?
Here's my guesstimate on what happened. Right before the beginning of the season, there was an 8-year deal on the table, and it was 12-something. I don't think it was McDavid. I don't think it was 12.5. Now, I assume, this is my assumption, it was 12.34.
Okay.
We know Matthews wears 34. The new number is 11.634. That's not a coincidence. Somebody had mentioned to me in the summer, like, don't be surprised if there's a 3-4 in this somewhere. I don't think it was going to be $34 million.
These guys are incredible.
So
just save it for your phone.
I think Toronto, what's his number? 416-XXX-3434.
Listen, probably. I know one Maple Leaf who had that.
There's been a lot of guys. There's been a lot of guys that have had that. But at that time, I just don't think the Maple Leafs are ready to go there.
Any idea why?
I don't know.
That seems to be the one question I keep coming back to. The Leafs weren't ready for this. The question is why?
No. Not. I think they knew it was going to be a big deal. I just didn't think they knew if they wanted it to go to 12.34 at that time.
Okay.
I'm not sure they were ready to do that. Until we get the full story, that's what I guess. And then he comes out and he gets 10 goals in 6 games, and it's off the charts.
Yeah.
So then I think for 8 years, it was close to $14 million. I know Nick said 15. I'm not saying he's wrong. I heard it was close to 14, just under 14.
Yep.
I mean, one of us is more right than the other. I don't know. I'm just telling you what I heard. I heard it was close to 14. Toronto just couldn't do that. And so I think they started moving backwards, and they were trying to save every dollar they could. I heard Berkey on the radio in Toronto on Wednesday morning on our flagship, the Fan 590, saying they should have gotten a 6th year. Like, 4 was off the table. That walks Matthews to free agency. They weren't doing that. If you're not doing 8, why are you doing 7? So it came down to 5 or 6. And I think there was a 3 in there too, and I'll get to that in a second. I think if it was 6, it probably started with a 12. By this time, I think that was the number that they were going to get.
You said a second ago, when it was in the neighborhood of 14 or maybe just a shade less, the Maple Leafs couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. They couldn't do that because of Matthews, or they couldn't do that based on what they'll have to pay subsequent free agents, Reed, Mitch, Marner.
It's everybody else. Okay. Now, you've asked about 12.34. You'll remember that when the Maple Leafs signed Tavares, there was a conversation after Tavares said he was coming there, where Toronto wanted to get him at 10 or 10.5. And the Saturday night, Tavares called the Leafs and said, let's get this done, get it to 11. And they said, okay, and they got the deal done. So think about it. They've got Tavares at 11. You can see why they would have been uncomfortable with Matthews at 12.34.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, what I'm guessing what happened. And then he gets off to that start. Carolyn Cameron asked Kyle a really good question about that.
Hindsight's 20/20, but now that this deal's done, do you look back on the summer and think, what could have this deal looked like then?
Yeah, I don't know what this deal on a 5-year could have looked like then. I think that's always easy for people to say, and I think, you know, we got working at it in the summer, and obviously Austin has performed very well, and I don't know what exact rumors or innuendo are out there in terms of what this could have been in the summer, but I know that we're happy to have it now, and I don't really operate in a way where we're looking back and wondering what might have been. We're at where we're at, and we're very comfortable and happy with it, and we're thrilled to have Austin Matthews here for an additional 5 more years.
The one lesson a lot of teams might look at this is try to get these guys done earlier. Now, that's easy to say. A number of execs told me yesterday that they have been trying to do that with their RFAs.
But is everyone just waiting for the big guy to go? Big guy's gone now.
Well, yes, but there's one other thing they're waiting for. In this summer, they were trying to talk to these guys, and a lot of the players and agents were saying, all right, let's wait till Nylander gets done. Let's see what he gets. So Nylander gets done, and a bunch of these teams reached out again and said, okay, it's done. And they're like, you know what? No, we're going to wait. And it was almost as if they were waiting to see, like, what was the next domino. And now the big domino is gone. But there's another factor in all of this, and that is that, Jeff, for the first time, these teams believe that offer sheets are going to happen. They believe it. And at the end of the day, that's what Toronto was staring down. Do we set the number for Austin Matthews, mm-hmm. or does someone else? What if somebody walks up and says, Austin Matthews, 7 times 16?
Leafs would have to match it, but it would pooch them.
So if your choice is that or 5 times 11.634, you're doing that. At the end of the day, it's a victory for Toronto because they get the contract done.
So are you saying then that regardless of Matthews' deal being done, and he's the whopper, some would argue Braden Point, but let's just say Austin Matthews is the whopper of this group, and there's that bar that's now been set, that we don't expect all of a sudden, Aho, boom, Tkachuk, boom, Connor, boom, Besser, boom. We don't expect that to fall until July, when offer sheets may be a factor?
I don't know now. I think that some of these agents and teams might say, okay, we kind of have an idea. We're going to do this. But I think it's going to be up to the agent to figure out, does my player really realistically have a shot in an offer sheet?
You wrote about Ken Holland.
Yep.
And that's an interesting one.
Yep.
Not denying that offer sheets may be a thing.
The two places I heard it, he did it on Sirius XM with Steve Koulias, the screaming Greek, Steve Koulias. And Steve asked him about it, and he didn't say no. He kind of talked around it.
I'm not going to just run around and do a bunch of offer sheets or an offer sheet just for the because I think it's going to be make some news, and it's good. You're going to do an offer sheet if you think it's an opportunity to secure a player that would be good for your team, and maybe some other team is in a position where they cannot match. So I'm not telling you 100%. I was asked the question, would you do offer sheets? My answer is yes, we would consider offer sheets if we think that it's going to lead to us to have a real chance to acquire a player that's going to make us better. That doesn't mean 100% for sure we're doing offer sheets. The message I'm trying to tell our fan base is that we know we got to get better. We want to get better faster.
And there was another interview in The Athletic. He's same thing. I think it was Max Boltman was the reporter. And again, he asked him about offer sheets, and he kind of didn't say yes, didn't say no. And Detroit is one of the teams that people have talked about that if anyone does it, they're going to be high on the list. I think that's kind of where we are now. The difference is that in the past, we've always talked about offer sheets and no one does it. Now I think at least the teams believe somebody could do it, which changes the dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And also, these younger players, Jeff, they've got big brass ones.
Yeah, no,
they're not as compliant as the previous generation.
So this is the same way that people would talk about fighting. It's not necessarily the fight, but the threat of one that affects behavior.
The
actual punching in the face. All that changes behavior. But it's a threat that it might happen that changes behavior. That's what you're saying about offer sheets.
Yes.
That teams now are saying, this might be a real. It might just not be one rogue GM who's going to, you know, out of nowhere try to pluck someone. This is legit.
Absolutely, it's legit. At least they think it is. As, like you, a person who roots for chaos, yeah. I hope for it.
Oh, you and me both.
But they at least believe it's a possibility.
How many teams out there went, and the obvious one is Arizona, how many teams out there when the Matthews deal was announced went, ah, put that offer sheet back?
Got to be a couple.
You mentioned the number three, and we'd return to it. Why?
Well, I think there was a three-year deal, and he did say the other day they talked about everything for 3 to 8 years. I think the three-year deal was discussed. One of the things I heard was the number going to be as low as everybody hoped? Or would Matthews and his agent, Judd Moldaver, say, if we're taking the risk of only 3 years, is the number going to be higher than you think because of the risk we're going to take?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's the reason three could not work.
Before we get to, we'll hit a break and we'll get to Mitch Marner and the rest of the RFAs, your points, Tkachuk, Sahos, Trubas, keep going, Besser, Rantanen. How does this reflect on, so we talked about it from the Matthews point of view and Judd Moldaver and Orr Group Wasserman. How does this reflect on Kyle Dubas? And if you look at the body of work, since he's become a general manager, Tavares, Muzzin trade, Nylander contract, Matthews contract, it's been a big year for the rookie GM. Anything we can read into as the book starts to get written about Kyle Dubas, general manager in the NHL?
You know, the thing I liked the most that he said the other day was, if this doesn't work, it's going to be our failure to get people around them to make it happen. I thought that was a great quote, and if I was running a team and I was asked that question, that is the way I would hope to answer it, because that's the way a person who's in charge should answer that question. You look at Edmonton the other night. So they play Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
So on the cap, but out of the lineup, Spooner, Manning,
Petrovic.
By the way, I really feel bad for that guy.
So do I.
I think that guy was going in a really good direction, and the last couple of years in Florida, I hope he gets a chance to get his career back on track, because I think that guy has something to offer. So Spooner, Manning, Petrovic, Pouliot buyout, Greiba buyout. So that's five guys, and Spooner is a $3 million player minus the drop. Manning and Petrovic make what they make. Like, that's what, $8 million that's not in your roster taking up space.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, those are the things that you have to make sure you get it right around them. When I look at Dubas and I look at Toronto, that's what will ultimately judge the job they do. I like the Trevor Moore contract, $775 for 2 years starting next year.
Guaranteeing he's in the NHL.
I think that kid has a real chance.
I agree.
Muzzin, one more year at $4 million. I think that's really good. They've got two more years before they've got to deal with Anderson, and then eventually they're going to have to deal with, you know, Kadri and Riley. And the tough ones next year are going to be Janssen and Kapanen. But the fact is, I thought that was a great answer, because I think that's the truth. I don't think it's the Matthews contract that's going to hurt you, because you know what he's going to do for you. I think you have to make sure your bets around them pay out. That's where you have to trust your people.
You mentioned Kapanen, and we just had a conversation about offer sheets, and many have pointed this out, and I think it's an interesting conversation. If you're going to, quote-unquote, hurt the Maple Leafs or put them in a situation where they have to pinch to try to squeeze to keep him in the lineup, you don't offer sheet the big boys. They'll just match and figure it out lower down the lineup. You go after the Kapanens.
I don't disagree with that at all.
$4 million for Kasperi Kapanen. What's the compensation?
See, one of my buddies, one of the guys who says we've been too nuts about this stuff this year,
yep.
He sent me a text last night, and he said, all right, now that this is done, how soon is it going to be until you start talking about offer sheets for Kapanen? And I said, I'm going to try to wait a week. I couldn't even get a day, thanks to you.
On that, we'll pause and remind you, 31 Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali. More free agent talk in a moment.
Thanks, everybody, for coming. It's obviously a very exciting day for our organization to have signed Austin to a five-year contract extension, which will take us through to 2023-2024. We're obviously very thankful to our organization, MLSC, and our ownership group for giving us the opportunity to do this with Austin. And then most importantly, thankful to Austin, his parents, Brian and Emma, for their commitment to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and also to Judd Moldaver and Jeff Jackson from Wasserman Ore Group. They've been excellent to work with throughout this whole process. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Austin, and it's a very exciting day for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So thank you.
So the other names, now that we've discussed Austin Matthews, the other big one, we'll spend a little bit of time here because it's probably for a bigger conversation. We'll do it in subsequent weeks, is the Mitch Marner situation. Now, representation is Darren Ferris, and he has maintained Mitch just wants to play the year and worry about this later. Having said that, we saw the Fast Track piece in the Toronto Star where Ferris is quoted, and then the following morning, Darren Ferris maintained that what he was discussing was nothing recent, but more a discussion about what was happening in the summer. How do you read the Marner camp now that the Matthews number is done?
The biggest thing is what Marner said on Wednesday morning. So that article comes out on Wednesday, just, you know, a few hours before they're going to play the Senators. And at the morning skate, Marner said something very interesting.
I mean, you know, still nothing's really changed. I'm still just trying to focus on the season as much as possible, and I'll let Kyle and my agent talk. And, you know, I've kind of told both parties that I don't really want to be informed until, you know, something's about to happen. Until then, I kind of just want to focus on this team.
You know what that says to me?
Hmm.
If you're not letting Austin Matthews risk an offer sheet, are you really going to let Mitch Marner risk one?
No.
They're going to go to him, and they're going to try to close this. And if I was Marner, what I would do is I would say to everybody in my camp, no more public comments. Now, as a journalist, I don't like giving that advice to anyone because it's bad for me.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was Marner, I would do that. I would say everything private, and I bet you, I think they're going to get an extension done. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's before we expect it. All the time.
When do we expect it?
Well, right now we expect it after the season, right?
Right.
Because that's what the public position is. I wouldn't be surprised if it's sooner, because I think the whole thing the whole time is the Marner camp wanted to know the Matthews number. Now we know it.
Agree or disagree, I don't think that the Marner contract will have anything to do with playoffs, unlike other people on that roster.
True. They see him as a cornerstone. He is a cornerstone.
Other numbers will be decided by what happens in the postseason.
And I agree with that. You know, we all talk about Toronto's roster and what's it going to look like. I think the rest of the season, the playoffs, is going to determine that.
Now that the Matthews number is out there, the obvious question becomes, what's the number for Marner? Do they want the same number?
I'm sure Marner wants the same number.
Do they get the same number?
I think it's going to depend on the term.
Could they get the same number if the term was longer?
I think they're going to argue that they deserve the same number, whatever the term is.
Like take the contract, put it in the Xerox machine, replace Matthews
with Marner. Put your liquid paper on it.
And we'll sign that.
For those of you who don't know what liquid paper is, it's whiteout. I don't know. I'm sure that that's going to be their starting point. I mean, we'll see.
Other RFAs. I keep coming back to Braden Point.
Well, the thing about Point is that he's in a tax-free state. And that is different. It's comparing apples to oranges. All those guys have taken less. And one of the reasons that a lot of those guys have taken less was because Steve Yzerman took a hard line with Steven Stamkos. He said 8.5 and that's it. You pick the term and that's the number. And at the end, they tried to negotiate a bit and Yzerman said no. And I do think Tampa's play will be, this is the way we go, and we're going to hold you to that. You're going to get paid very well, whether it's bridge or term, but you're going to fit in our structure. Again, I think if you're Tampa, you have to figure out, is somebody going to come and blow up your structure?
This is a team that is going to be up against it.
Yes.
You don't think that if, and we'll just use, we'll just pull it, sort of out of nowhere, but sort of not out of nowhere. Let's just say Detroit, if they're going to play the offer sheet game.
Mm-hmm.
And if maybe Steve Yzerman is there,
mm-hmm.
You don't think they go after Point?
Why wouldn't you? That's what you have to weigh if you're Tampa. You have to sit there and say, okay, do we believe like Toronto does that there's offer sheets coming? And if so, are they coming for our guy?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, what are we going to do about it? Now, don't forget, in the summer, you can get 10% over the cap.
Yep.
So that's a big deal. But again, that's the same thing. Like, you have to weigh this, one of the same questions that Toronto did.
Will anyone have a tougher time than Winnipeg?
Now, Nick said last week on The Fan in Toronto that Laine might go for a bridge. And I could see that. I could see that. But what about Kyle Connor?
That's the biggie.
What about Trouba? Like, those are three big ones. Now, the last I heard, there were no negotiations going on with Myers.
Okay.
So they haven't even talked to him. I almost wonder if Winnipeg is kind of in a situation where they're saying, we're going to hold all business till after the season and we figure this out. Although they're very quiet. They do a very good job at keeping a secret. Mm-hmm. Although I am getting better at getting info, but it's still not easy. You know, they have another one there that's really interesting. It's Brossoit.
The backup.
All of a sudden, he's gone from a guy who Edmonton could have kept him last year if they played him in more games. And, you know, he left. And at last year, there was, you know, he didn't look the same. Now, and, you know, Adam Francilia is a guy who's getting a great reputation as kind of a goalie guru. Brossoit goes with him. He looks really good. He's 1 year away from unrestricted free agency. You know what?
It's the era of the backup goalie.
There's not enough goalies now. If he has another year next year, like so far he's showing this year, he's going to be in pretty high demand.
So what does Winnipeg do here? And the reason I ask that is, this is all under the umbrella now of the Austin Matthews deal, which is almost all bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
This is all bonus money.
Winnipeg doesn't like bonuses.
That's where I'm going.
Yeah.
Now that the Matthews contract is out there, the number is one thing and how you pay it is another.
Yep.
Now that that's out there, what does Winnipeg do?
I think they're going to have to pick which guy they want to keep. Like, if you're the Jets, who's your primary target to keep? And the other thing is, you know that Morrissey's on a short-term deal.
Yes.
Like, the Jets like term. Shifley, 6. Wheeler, 5. Buffalin, 5. Hellebuck just signed 6. They like term.
Mm-hmm.
Little, 5. Trouba, 1. Liney, maybe bridge. Connor.
Kyle Connor very quietly.
30 goals last year.
He is elite.
Going to be right there again this year. You got to pick your guy.
If it's late November, early December, I'm saying Liney.
Yep.
After that, I'm not saying Liney. Which is why, to Nick's point, it might be a bridge deal for him. I don't know. What do you do? I always default to defense, and I love Trouba and Morrissey as a pair, so I go to Trouba, but that's my own bias.
Well, the thing is, the biggest question about Trouba is, does he want to be there
does
past
be
UFA
there?
Years? You know, Trouba, I got to say, I'm impressed with that guy. Like, he's not, him and Kurt Overhart haven't always been that easy for them to negotiate with, but he plays. Whatever he thinks and whatever he wants to do long term, you can't fault his effort. And we know he doesn't like being on the right, left side.
Mm-hmm.
As long as he's on the right side, he's played. Like, you can never argue he hasn't given them everything he's got as long as he's been happy on his side.
You have a feeling about Matthew Tkachuk? Pivot to Calgary.
And he's another guy. Like,
if he gets 90 points.
He's, like, he's another guy. Who wouldn't want that guy on his team?
Future captain when Giordano's done.
Riddick. Calgary finds a way to get deals done, and I think they will. But, again, it's not going to be easy.
What a summer Mike Liut's about to have. Rantanen and Laine. I mean, he has others, but a couple of biggies right there for each.
Well, that's the thing. Like, when we had him on earlier in the year, he likes to wait.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the goal scoring is so important, and guys get paid for that. I think the biggest key is, and this is the thing about with the Matthews contract. Until Tuesday, you're sitting there and you're saying, okay, let's say it's right and that Laine does take a bridge. You think you're getting away with less. Now, what's less? Like, what's Laine taking for 2 or 3 years? It's probably more today. Now, it's not $11.64 million, I don't think, for $6.34 million for 2 or 3 years. But what's less today than it was on Tuesday?
What do you think? I'm bad at this.
I don't know. It depends on how much he scores.
I know all scorers are streaky. That is the reality of the history of the NHL. But this is freaky streaky. from someone to put up, you know, 19 goals in a month to three.
You know what the thing is? And I understand that goal scorers are streaky. I think the thing is that there was a game last week. I can't remember who they played, but he made a great back check. Like, I could see the coaching staff being really excited about what Laine did. He made a great back check.
Yeah.
So he knocked the puck off an opposing forward who was rushing up the ice. But then the puck was around the Winnipeg zone for a while, and you could tell he didn't know what to do or where to go. He was very uncertain about what he should do. Now, I think that stuff you can teach. Guys can learn. But that natural talent, you can't teach that.
You have to want to do that, by the way.
He doesn't strike me as a guy who at some point won't figure out that he has to do that. Do you think that this guy doesn't want to do it? I mean, maybe.
I don't know him well enough to judge.
Maybe not now, but I always remember what I was like as a 20, 21-year-old guy, what a complete stupid idiot I was. And now that, you know, I'm 48, how much, it's like, you know, it's like the old line, the problem with youth is that it's wasted on the young.
Was it Mark Twain said, when I was a kid, I thought my dad was the stupidest person in the world, and by the time I turned 21, it was amazing how much he had learned.
That's right. I just look at this guy, Laine, and I see that he seems to have a great attitude. He seems like a pretty positive guy. I can't look at this guy and say he's not going to figure it out.
One last RFA. We'll move along, I swear. Sebastian Aho, and the reason he's interesting is not the player, because he's fantastic. The team, the Carolina Hurricanes. Is this a show-me moment for the Canes?
In the sense that they're going for it?
In the sense that this is our big RFA, and we're going to step up with money.
Well, they're going to have to.
Carolina, pre-Tom Dundon, always had the reputation of, you know, squeezing the beaver on the nickel till it squeals.
Again, it comes down to, do they believe their guy is going to be targeted? I know this answer is really boring, but it's the answer I have to everything. I think Toronto believed that Matthews could get an offer sheet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think Tampa should believe that Point's going to get an offer sheet if they don't sign him. I think they should believe it. Carolina, I think, again, they should believe it. Now, here's my question. I think Matthews moves the needle. I think Point moves the needle on your team. They make your team better.
Yep.
The tough thing for Aho is, I think he's a really good player, but does he move the needle?
He's not Matthews or Point.
And people are going to say,
you're
insulting him. No, we're not insulting him. But are you throwing offer sheet money at him? I think he's really good. You have to give an offer sheet that Carolina won't match. And this is an organization that tried it with Sergei Fedorov 20 years ago.
Just as an aside, how much of that was the Little Caesars?
Yeah, of course. It was a big, screw you, no screw you contest.
Yeah, it's illich. And
are you doing a blow your brains out offer sheet for him?
Right.
I think you're doing it for Point.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're doing it for Matthews. Are you doing it for Aho? With their cap situation, because they have room.
We'll stay tuned to find out there. Some other issues around the NHL. You mentioned the Edmonton Oilers and insulating players, having complimentary players in Toronto around players like Austin Matthews, and in Edmonton around players like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. You always wait for tipping points or moments where, whoa, this is becoming too much. Now it's at a crescendo. This is bottoming out. This is it. This is the zenith. When jerseys start to hit the ice,
mm-hmm.
is that the next level of panic?
Well, it's happened there before, right?
It has happened there before, but this one is squandering a 2-1 lead in the third period against the Chicago Blackhawks, just coming out flat in the third period, had the lead, should have been a game. Talbot gets the hook, glares at Ken. There's a lot of awful in that Tuesday night game against the Chicago Blackhawks from the Edmonton point of view. 5 goals in the third. And then the jersey hits the ice. That doesn't happen every day.
They've had it happen to them before.
But you can't shrug it off.
The Oilers took the first 2 games in this season series. The Blackhawks come back and take the third. fans here at Rogers Place voicing their displeasure as what they have seen here in the third period. Cam Ward gets his 10th victory of the season as the Blackhawks dominate in the third period and skate away with a 6-2 victory.
Well, Ken, you've had some struggles in the third period, but that kind of goes to a new level. Four goals and under 3 minutes and game's over.
Yeah. Well, we weathered the storm after two. They were coming at us pretty good in the second two. They were building their game, and we started strong and went the other way. And I didn't see the third period coming, but we paid for not managing the puck.
Pulling Cam at that spot, was it kind of, were you not happy with the goals, or it was just more of a try and get the team to kind of regroup? And
well, I was trying to get a timeout without a timeout, so just trying to do something. So
I thought it was really interesting watching their practice on Wednesday that
thanks.
Glenn Gulletson did it from the ice and Ken Hitchcock watched it from the stands. That says to me that Hitchcock says they need another voice for a day.
Mm-hmm.
That is just a rough, rough ride there. I don't have the answers for Edmonton right now. I don't. They've tried everything. They've fired a GM. They've fired a coach. They've made moves. They gave Koskinen an extension. Now they're trying to take Hitchcock away for a day. What else are you going to do?
I don't know.
And you're going for it. It's not like you're conceding anything.
No one's conceding anything. We'll get to the Anaheim Ducks here in a second. They're not conceding anything. They've lost, what, 17 of 19, and they're only a handful of points out of it.
I have a feeling Bob Murray is going to do some major surgery there.
Major, because right now he's picked around the edges.
No, it may take time, but he's going to have some major surgery there.
When you say major surgery, could that include the captain?
Getzlaf?
Getzlaf's got a couple,
well, first
of
all,
couple years left, and if you're going to reprogram this team and redevelop this team, however you want to phrase it, it's going to go through a rebuild. By the time it actualizes as the next generation Anaheim Ducks, his contract will be done.
He's got the power, though, right? He has to agree. Is he going to want to leave?
I doubt it, but do you have that conversation with him?
I think you have the conversation. I think you always have the conversation and say, you know what, Ryan, it's going to be tough here. They should have a better team than they do.
He doesn't want to fire the coach. That's obvious.
Well,
he's had plenty of opportunities,
but the thing
to
is,
do so.
If they do it, he'll do it after the season. He doesn't want to do it in season.
So they'll ride this out and miss the playoffs.
You know, he went to Carlisle in the summer and they said, if you want to keep your job, we have to change the way we play. And he didn't say no. I think he looks at it and he said, this is the way our roster is constructed. Anaheim has had a good run for a long time.
Sure.
Maybe it's just time. And I'll tell you something. As a team, they're not really good right now. But if you look at the pieces, if he wanted to trade Lindholm, if he wanted to trade
everybody
Fowler,
would want Lindholm. Everybody would want Gibson.
If he wanted
everybody
to trade
would
Raquel,
want Fowler. Raquel's having a soft season, I know, but everybody would line up for
if
Raquel.
If he wanted to trade Silverberg, who they're trying to sign.
Trying to resign him.
If he wanted to trade Kasa, who's been hurt, he could get something for all of those guys.
Sure.
You know, the biggest one for me, though, is Ottawa.
Okay, shoot.
We haven't mentioned Ottawa yet in this podcast, and we should. The Stone thing is really interesting. He's quiet. That means it's either really good or really bad.
So we're either close to something here or...
It's the Titanic.
Get me out of here.
Yeah, like there's no... When it's quiet like that, it's only one or the other. There's no in-between. Duchesne is really interesting. You know, he did a big scrum on Wednesday morning. He was really good. He didn't indicate they've given him any kind of deadline. I see a guy who really likes Ottawa for his family and is really torn because he knows...
Torn on being comfortable versus winning?
Winning. He's going to get paid. I think he's wrestling with, I like it here. It's good for my family. I'm comfortable. I won't win in my prime, likely.
Let me give you a hypothetical.
Okay.
If Matt Duchesne gets a deal done with Ottawa before anything happens with Stone, do we read into that that Stone is done? Because it would seem like Stone would be the first one you would do.
No, I've learned over the years never to assume anything. Sometimes because it looks logically on the outside doesn't mean that that's the way they're going to do it on the inside.
Okay.
Because they could be saying, we want to show further commitment to Stone by getting Duchene done. Like, I've learned never to assume things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I think the other thing is that's really interesting? That the Duchene got out, but the Stone didn't in terms of the initial offer. I think because in Duchene's case, I think there was an actual offer. I heard in Stone's case, it was more of a concept. Now, it could be semantics. It could be splitting hairs. I'm not right there. I just don't know. But I wouldn't assume that. I think also Stone, he's really a private guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he probably just said, I want the lockdown on this. And he has said that publicly.
Let's say this has gone, for the purposes of cheering for Team Chaos, this has gone not well for Stone by way of contract with the Ottawa Senators. And they look to take him to market to find out what they can get.
Yep.
Listen, everybody does better with Mark Stone in their lineup.
He's can you talk
fantastic.
To him?
Fantastic. Is that the big
well,
one?
Well, I think so. Like, if another team can, well, at least I would want to know, if I'm going to trade for Mark Stone, can I sign him? Mm-hmm. Can I talk to him?
What if you can't?
You know, they probably get a good price, but not as good as they could get if
yeah.
they'd sign him. Like, Columbus apparently is not letting anyone talk to Panarin.
I'm going to get to Panarin in a sec, but
yeah.
further on Stone, everybody else wants Stone. Everybody wants Stone.
Who doesn't?
Right?
If you're going for term, then I think there'd even be more teams. Because there would be teams who maybe not even in the playoff race this year who would say,
we're close.
We'll take Stone. No, but they would say, if we can get him for term, he can help us get better for years to come.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We're close,
yeah.
and we can get closer with him
yes.
to get us into the playoffs.
Yeah. Even if we're not going to win this year, we think he can help us win in the next few years.
Winnipeg seems to be an obvious one. Is it too obvious to be right or the opposite?
No, I think it's fairly obvious. Vegas. I could even see a team like Calgary looking at that. But then again, who wouldn't?
Mm-hmm.
Who wouldn't want the guy?
Panarin.
Every day I believe he's getting traded more and more. But I think the fascinating thing is what Columbus is going to do with that. Are they going to take the assets they get for him if they do it and flip it for something that can help him this year?
Doug McLean talked about this on our show last Wednesday.
Yes.
And brought up a really good point. His idea was you move Artemi Panarin, pick your team. The assets you get back, you take to another team to get an established player or players to help you for the playoffs this year. You think that's a reasonable scenario? If not a likely one?
I think it is very, very possible.
Who would be the teams most interested?
In him?
Panarin.
See, I think there would be teams, again, who want to get their claws on him to see if he would stay.
The one that jumps out at me are the Boston Bruins.
Boston, yes. And I've said on this podcast that I wasn't sure that Boston would want to do the rental again. But this guy is a different stratosphere.
Next level.
Nashville, I think, is big into Panarin.
And they just made two big moves Wednesday.
Yeah, but I think they still could do more. I think Nashville is into Panarin. I don't know for sure, but I wonder if like a team that is out of it, like LA, would go after Panarin. Like, here's a move that I would do if I was LA.
Okay.
Offer them Kovalchuk. Assuming Kovalchuk's willing to go, I would offer Columbus. You get Kovalchuk for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Question is, how good does Columbus think he is? And do they think he can fit them? Would he go there? The Kovalchuk Kings thing isn't working. Would Columbus feel any differently? You trade him there and you get Panarin on your team and you see, can we sign him? Because if you're LA, you got to think you're on Panarin's list.
You think he just wants big market teams?
I think he wants West Coast, East Coast, maybe a couple other spots. I know Chicago's hopeful. I know Philly's hopeful. But L.A., you got to think, fits on his list.
While we're on the Columbus topic, the other guy, the goalie, Bobrovsky.
Yeah.
Anything new there? Oh, and by the way, all of this under the umbrella of Florida making big moves that many are pointing to and saying they're freeing up cap space to take a run at both these guys.
You know, I think I mentioned in my blog this week, I think Hoffman could be on the move too for the same reason. He makes 5-something next year and people will look at scores. I could see Florida looking to do that. Again, I have mentioned this before. Nobody will answer this question because I understand they don't want to say it. Bobrovsky, has he actually submitted a list of teams he will go to? Or is he sitting there saying, verbally, I will consider certain teams, but they don't have a list?
Mm-hmm.
Until I'm told there's an actual list, because I have people telling me there is no actual list, I think it's just verbal. And in that case, there's not much Columbus can do without his approval.
You surprised a lot of people on Saturday.
What did I do this time?
By mentioning Taylor Hall.
Couple of other notes. First of all, Taylor Hall, when Panarin said that when Columbus learned that they couldn't negotiate with Panarin in season, some teams started taking stock of their own free agents. And one of the rumblings was maybe New Jersey might think of trading Taylor Hall now as opposed to waiting until the summer. I spoke today with Ray Shiro. He said zero chance that Taylor Hall is traded in season this year. He is staying as a Devil past the deadline.
That was a shock to a lot of people.
It wasn't a shock to some people I spoke to. It had a lot to do with the Panarin thing. Now, I normally read his column. I somehow missed this. But apparently Larry Brooks in the Post had written a big thing about New Jersey can't afford to lose Taylor Hall and they should consider trading him now. Somebody mentioned that to me after I reported it, and they said, did you do it because of this? And I said, no, I actually hadn't seen that. I had heard that maybe New Jersey would consider the possibilities. That's why I just called them and I asked them. I do think that this is coming now, that teams are going to start thinking about if we're really tearing ourselves down, we can't let happen with Tavares and Panarin happen to us, so we might have to go even earlier, send them two trade deadlines out. Now, obviously, New Jersey isn't thinking that. I don't believe there's any reason to think that Hall wants out.
There have to be some players, though, that look at what John Tavares did and said, why not me?
Well, Panarin, for sure, is one of them. I have to tell you, Hall, at the NHL-NHLPA media event this year, he kind of talked about it, that it was something that really intrigued him. But I heard the rumor, so I asked the question. That's all we can really do. I think New Jersey will do whatever it can to tell Taylor Hall its plan and say, this is how we're going to rebound from this year. And I will say this. I think last year when they were in the playoffs, he really loved it. This year, it's a tough year. You probably like it less. But if they've got a plan, he'll listen. And I think that's what they're going to sell him on. I
talked about Nashville a couple of seconds ago and mentioned the trades. Brian Boyle is now a Pred. Cody McLeod is now a Pred.
That made a lot more sense when we heard that Ronaldo was out for the year.
Right.
And plus they know him and they like the guy. So totally. I get it.
And they've always liked to have a slugger in the lineup.
Yep.
Always.
And they don't have Austin Watson.
Not done.
No, like I said, I think they like Panarin. It wouldn't surprise me if they're in around Duchesne or Stone if those guys become available. They have the assets to do it.
A couple more things before I get to a couple of hashtag Ask31s. I want to get your thoughts on Patrice Bergeron, okay?
Hall of Famer.
Yeah, going away. Played his 1,000th game.
I'm a real genius for coming up with that.
That's good, Fried. I've always been intrigued in players who were perennial rookies, and that's what Bergeron was. Of course, he's been the Boston Bruins for a number of years now, but you know, the one-year midget, only played 1 year in the QMJHL, played the 1 year with the Boston Bruins, made the team after being a second-round draft pick. A lockout happens into the American Hockey League. So for four seasons, he was a rookie in the league that he was playing with. I don't know, although someone's going to let me know about it on Twitter, I don't know that I've seen a player ever do that before. With the 1 year midget, 1 year Q, one or junior, whatever, 1 year NHL, 1 year AHL, but that was Patrice Bergeron. We got a tweet from a guy by the name of David McDonald, who's a regular listener, I suspect, asking if he's the best two-way forward ever. And normally when I hear who's the best two-way forward ever, my default is always Bob Gainey.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as this generation goes, they make a lot of noise about Pavel Datsyuk, certainly. But you got to really pause on that for a second and say, maybe Bergeron is the best two-way forward ever.
One story I remember about him was after they won the cup in 2011. I went to a golf tournament that summer with a member of the Canucks. You know, they were obviously still in a really tough spot. And I just said, anything that stands out to you, we're talking, I said, what do you remember that still stands out? And he talked about a lot of the obvious things. And then he said, the one thing that really stands out that isn't obvious is that we didn't realize how good Patrice Bergeron was.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's obviously because you play in the other conference and you don't see him as much. Just an incredibly respected guy. The name's going up in the rafters in Boston. Nobody's going to be wearing 37 after he retires. Pretty soon, Boston jerseys are going to have three digits because they're just running out of guys.
So many of them.
But
yeah,
he's a Hall of Famer. He's a great player. And the thing that I've always admired about him is he's come back from an awful lot. Concussions.
You think going back to the Randy Jones hit and since, and that Stanley Cup final against Chicago where he broke almost like, he was like Evel Knievel. He broke every bone.
It was like the knight from Monty Python's Search for the Holy Grail.
It was great.
And he's just a calm, relaxed guy.
He's a pro.
He's a pro.
Player's player.
And remember all that talk about, oh, it's hard to find a guy to play with Crosby?
I know.
You can play with him. So could Marchand.
Okay, before Elliot, we get to a couple of hashtag Ask31s here to conclude the podcast. Special shout out to Amanda Marcotte, who sent us this tweet before the Vancouver, Colorado game. Hey, Friege and Merrick, heard on 31 Thoughts that Jay Beagle never gets signs during warmups, so we're here to help. So her and her friend, partner, don't know, Mike Hess, made these signs. Jay Beagle, 83, this sign is for you. And Mike has one, number 83, faster than an iPhone 1. I think this is the first signs we've seen that reference the podcast.
Very nice. Thank you very much. And then the Capitals fan is doing a great job on his return.
It's great.
The other night, although I always get a good laugh because they played the tribute video for him. And Alexander Ovechkin went over to give him a hug. And every time that happens, it's Kelly Rudy, I think of, who goes crazy when players do that around game time. So somewhere last night, Kelly Rudy was angry, and he has no idea why.
Kelly doesn't like that and doesn't like handshakes.
No, after. He hates handshakes.
He's not the only one. There are a lot, and we can do this another time, historically, a lot of big-name players, whether it was Billy Smith or Stan Mikita, like a lot of guys didn't like the handshakes. Okay, we'll hit a break. We'll come back with some hashtag Ask31 to conclude this week's 31 Thoughts podcast. Thoughts is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra Denali, complete with the world's first six-function multi-pro tailgate. Nets sliding around on the way to pond hockey use the built-in load stop to help keep them in place. Loading what seems like half a team's worth of bags, the tailgate also turns into a step for easier access and has an inner gate that flips down for unloading all the gear you can fit. GMC Sierra Denali, we are professional grade. Okay, Elliot, before we get to a couple of Twitter questions here, I want to mention the big read at sportsnet.ca, Gare Joyce's piece on Akeem Alou, all about his hazing situation going back to the OHL's Windsor Spitfires in 2005 with Steve Downey. Some profound comments from Alou himself in this, what happened when he stood up to the veteran, what has happened to his career since. And should note as well, and Gare points this out in the piece, since Alou stood up to Downey in that situation, there have been no reports of hazing from the OHL since the Alou incident. So check that piece out. And Alou keeps on scrapping to be a hockey player. When I first saw Akeem Alou, he was playing minor midget Marlboro's AAA team, one of the best minor midget teams I ever saw. He was on a team with John Tavares, who was an underager, Sam Gagne, Brendan Smith, Justin Vive, Rick's kid, and the aforementioned Akeem Alou. I think they only lost one game that entire year.
Did Tavares blow a shootout like he did in the one with Steven Stamkos we talked about at All-Star?
Oh,
the
yeah.
The travel
yeah.
team. They only lost one out of 50 games, and Tavares missed in the shootout, and they were ripping him.
No.
First of all, that's a good story by Gary. I read it. And secondly, you can always be an adult later. Follow your dreams.
Check that out at sportsnet.ca, the big read with Gare Joyce on Akeem Alou. some hashtag Ask31s. This is from Rico DeGaio. That's such a great handle. Rico DeModa. Hey guys, can one or either of you dumb down for us lay folk how escrow works in the context of the NHL? Even when I search it, the explanations are a bit convoluted. I always have to check myself in situations like that and check my assumptions, because if I'm just coming to the NHL now and hearing a podcast going on escrow this and escrow that, I don't know that we do a good enough time. I would never call it dumbing down, just explaining how escrow works and what it is and why players don't like it.
Here's the simplest way I can tell you. It's supposed to be split 50-50 between the players and the league.
This is what's called hockey-related revenue.
Now, there are some exceptions for certain costs and stuff, but that will get really convoluted. Basically, it's supposed to be split 50-50. If the player's salaries go over 50% of that, the league gets money back. If the player's salaries are below 50% of that, the players get money back. So off every paycheck, there's a certain amount taken off, and the league and the players agree to that amount four times a year. And the players hate it because they're getting an extra deduction off their check. Now, they get some of that money back, but not all. And that's what makes them crazy. But it has to be there to make sure the system works.
This question then follows that question.
Okay.
From Perry Burke. Apologies if this has been answered, but with players getting most of their money in bonuses, see Austin Matthews, I am assuming bonuses are not touched by escrow.
That's wrong.
Would that make it harder to lower escrow?
Bonuses are touched by escrow.
Okay. And then from Sydney McEwen, appreciate the podcast and analysis. Thank you, Sydney. If you are Mark Bergevin, how would you take advantage of your current cap space at the trade deadline? Or put another way, if a team is looking to rid a bad expiring contract, is it worth a second plus bad contract for a minor leaguer? What do you do if you're Bergevin now?
He has said he will not trade futures. He's not doing that. Now, I think he's been looking. Everybody caught him watching Anaheim twice this, well, three times because they went back to Montreal. But he was on the road for Winnipeg and Toronto. I think he's looking for depth forwards. I heard that they had looked at Brett Ritchie from Dallas recently. I think those are the kinds of guys he's looking for.
I want to end on this one, but before we do, Elliot, I want to let everyone know we are planning, so we get a lot of these Ask 31s, and I always feel bad not getting to enough.
Yeah, we're going
to
do a big one after the trade deadline.
We'll do a big, huge hashtag Ask 31. So thanks for the tweets. Keep sending them in. We're stockpiling them, and we will get to them.
It's all Jeff's fault.
Blame me. James Foster.
Oh, God. This is going to be bad. If you're laughing about it, this is going to be bad.
I love it. Elias Lindholm.
Yep.
Mocking the Canes' post-win celebration. Great heel move or the greatest heel move?
I don't know if I would call it the greatest one, but it was a great one. I guess he's the second guy to do it. Johnny Boychuk did it this year. And now Lindholm did it and apparently did it because he was getting booed. Now, somebody told me a Lindholm jersey was thrown on the ice, too.
Ah.
Now, I'm not sure if that happened before he did the chant or after he did it, but I heard a Lindholm jersey was thrown on the ice, too.
Did you enjoy that move?
Oh, the Viking clap? How can you not? Like, you know, it's all funny.
I lied. I want to end on this one.
Okay.
Duncan Field. After seeing Kovalchuk get boo-bombed last night in Newark, what has been the most contentious return of a player to any city or rink? I think that's an obvious one.
Well, the, one of the nastiest ones I ever saw was Vince Carter, and that wasn't NHL. That was NBA.
Yep.
I was already at hockey night when he came back to Toronto for the first time, and that one back was really nasty.
I don't know if this was nasty as much as it was over the top with the fans. And I think it happened in, like, Game 5 of the season. But the first time that Eric Lindros went back to Quebec. I shouldn't say back because he was never there. But the first time that Eric Lindros went to Quebec to face off against the Nordiques as a Flyer.
Oh, of course.
I think that was Game 4 or 5 of the season. Nordiques ended up winning. And there were people, we all know the story about throwing pacifiers on the ice. There were grown men wearing diapers over their jeans.
I wasn't there then. Like, I remember watching about that, but I wasn't anything I saw myself.
That was a good one. If you can think of any other ones, those are the ones that come to our minds right away. Just shoot us a tweet. The most contentious return of a player.
But in hockey history, that's got to be the one.
Lindros?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the biggie. You know, Todd Warner told me a great story because he was drafted the year after Lindros wouldn't put on the Nordiques jersey. And he was the next Nordique drafted. It was in Montreal. And he couldn't understand why he was getting a standing ovation until his agent said, well, last year with Lindros, they love you because here's an Anglophone putting on the fleur-de-lis. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, good for me. On that, we'll wrap up. Any closing thoughts, Elliot Friedman?
I hope nothing happens that dates this podcast before it goes to air.
We say that every single week.
Well, it's especially now.
This time of year? The minute this podcast goes off the air, you know that Panarin's getting
out. Oh, I know.
You know he's gone.
Nashville or something.
Boom. Thanks to our producer, Emil Delich. Quick reminder, we will have a podcast coming out Monday, and that's all I'm going to say about it. We're going to leave you now with the Hamilton Band. You've heard in a couple of hockey arenas and Elliott's. You've heard on Saturday nights. They're on tour in Western Canada, hitting every NHL market, plus Saskatoon. They'll be in Waterloo, Toronto, London, and Kingston at the end of the month, and Quebec to follow in March. They put on a heck of a show from their latest album, True Rockers. Here's Monster Truck with The Howler.
When I was a young boy, I was scared of the ghost beside my bed. The shapes, the sounds, and when I was a young boy, the fire and brimstone made me fear. The things not real, but I felt a premonition, sense something not right, like things are not just fiction, like there's something deep inside.